I wanted to find out more about Joanna because she was a financial patron of Jesus, and I mean a financial advisor, a female financial advisor.
Welcome to the Eden Podcast, where we true the verse of Genesis 3:16, and we discover that God didn't curse Eve or Adam or limit woman in any way.
This is True Friend Friday. I'm Bruce C. E. Fleming, Executive Director of the True 316 Foundation, home of the Eden Podcast. And on True Friend Friday, we relax a little bit and we have a good time with our friends. And we've got a special guest today. We're going to find out about her. And I think you'll get to learn from her stories, and her example will be a good model if you'd like to have somebody to follow, a good example to follow. Our co-host is Christy, and Christy, so many people say, who is she? How come her voice is so familiar? Do you want to use your voice and explain why you sound familiar, Christy?
Yeah, well, I think somewhere back in the day, I did some recordings for the opening introduction of the Eden Podcast. And Bruce is my dad. So Bruce and Joy are my mom and dad, and I'm honored to be able to co-host with you, Dad. This is kind of fun. I used to have my own podcast called The Mom Podcast. And enjoyed doing that. Dad, I'd like to think that I led the way for you to start the Eden Podcast and inspired you all along the way. but this is fun and a new dynamic to co-host with you. And I'm excited to get to know you, Elaine, today. Something about me that we discovered we have in common is I am a mom of twins. Now, my girls are in kindergarten this year, which is what allows me to be available to do some of these interviews while they're at school. And Elaine, you have adult twins. Are they adult twins?
Yes. I was very excited to share with you that I have twins. They are our firstborn. They're adults. They're actually both married at this stage. And we do have a third daughter as well. So three daughters. But our twins were our first. We had several years, almost a decade married before they were born with the help of fertility treatment.
That's beautiful.
So Elaine Kelly, we need to know more. Christy, yeah. you have details about Elaine's life here.
Yeah, I'll share your bio, Elaine. So Elaine Ricker Kelly uses her experiences as a woman in business to inspire and empower women at home, church, and society. She was an investment and insurance advisor for 30 years, has three grown daughters who we just learned about, and is passionate about writing to encourage girls and women in leadership. I love that. Forgotten Followers from Broken to Bold is a book you've written. It offers hope and healing to anyone who feels forgotten, belittled, or out of place. And another book you've written, The Sword, provides 104 flashcards. They're objective, memorable look at the rationale for diverse views on gender roles. Elaine, you live near Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, with your husband and lapdog. I almost threw in an A, but I thought I'd better refrain. And you and your husband love hiking the 900 kilometer Bruce Trail.
The what trail?
Yeah, I know.
All the way, if you can picture on the map, Niagara Falls, right in the corner of Buffalo, to that tiny point of land between Georgian Bay and Lake Huron. That's where this landmark is. It's an escarpment. We call it the side of a mountain, but it's really not. But anyway, it's a long trail. Dave and I took several weeks over a period of 3 years to hike the length of it.
I missed my calling. It's got a great name, the Bruce Trail. I think that's great. Yeah,
that's right.
I was wondering how long that would take. So over the course of 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, if people did it end to end, I think a normal hiker would take 6 weeks with it, but it doesn't have camping along the way. It's not meant to be a through trail.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Wow. So the name comes from the Bruce Peninsula. The Bruce Peninsula is that point of land between Georgian Bay and Lake Huron.
Oh, Dad, you miss where you're supposed to be living, your land.
I grew up on the other side of Lake Erie. I didn't know about the Bruce Peninsula up there. So the Bruce Peninsula has had that name for a long time, right?
Yeah.
So then, therefore, I was named after the Bruce Peninsula.
I'm really not sure why they called it the Bruce Peninsula. Obviously, it had a different name when the Indigenous people had it, and the colonists took it on and renamed it.
Yeah.
Good name. Good name.
Yeah. Well, I almost finished that bio, but I just want to complete that you enjoy hiking, which is very obvious from that, but nature, tennis, music, history, and culture. It's always fun to hear those last few details on a bio because it tells you, it gives you that more rounded view of who someone is and other things that they like to do outside of what you will spend the whole episode likely talking about.
Yeah. So we do play, Dave and I both play tennis quite a bit. We've started playing pickleball this year as well. That's the new thing to help through the winter. I do walk the dog every day. And so that's when I listen to the Eden podcast.
Oh, great.
Great. That's awesome. Well, Dad, do you want to launch the first question?
Sure. Let's do that. So Elaine, you are... you came to know the Lord. We're not quite sure. We'd like to know the details. People tell us their faith story. So when did you come to know Christ and begin to grow in him?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, my parents were both Christian believers, and we were raised in the United Church, which in the United Church in Canada was formed many years ago as a mixture of Methodist, Congregational, and Presbyterian. And when I was a teenager, the biggest youth group in town was at the Baptist church. So I went to the Baptist youth group. There were probably 50 teenagers every Saturday night, and we all shared in leadership. And at one of those meetings, we were talking about My Heart, Christ's Home, which is a little brochure that we were working from.
Robert Boyd Munger. Raised...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've heard it? Too.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was raised to be obedient. I was the kind of person colored in the lines, and that was hard on your own. So in my heart, Christ's home, I realized, you know, we don't have to do that on our own. Christ in us is what does it.
That's beautiful.
So then when we ask Christ into our heart, he's already given us skills and talents, and we've gotten training along the way, but he gives us spiritual gifts to use for the ministry. So I'd like to know about your ministry story. Take us along that line. What are the ups, the downs, the ins, the outs, the good, if there's any bad?
So I didn't consider myself doing ministry for a long time. I did start out, I got a business degree, which I guess is unusual for a woman, but my parents were egalitarian, I guess, in a lot of ways. And I was visiting my sister, actually. She and her husband were doing ministry in Tanzania. So I always thought she could do the ministry part, I'll do the business thing. And so I came home from that trip thinking I could help people by helping them manage their finances, stay out of debt, and build security. And then over the years, so I did change jobs a few times, not too many. And I also took programs through Kingdom Advisors, which is a group of Christian financial advisors. And they talked a lot about what it means to believe that all things are from God and that we are merely stewards of God's wealth.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So we started
me thinking that financial planning is a ministry and being a mother is a ministry and being a teacher is a ministry. And then after I left finances, I realized writing is a ministry.
So tell us about your writing. You now have a book and you have a kind of a book. What about that?
Yeah. So I was most interested in looking into the women of the Bible, of the gospel. And I was just researching it for my own sake at first. And I wanted to find out more about Joanna because she was a financial patron of Jesus. And I mean, a financial advisor, a female financial advisor. It's the best example I could find. And I also wanted to find out more about Mary of Clopas, because I imagine her being on the road to Emmaus with the risen Lord. Mm-hmm. So after I did all this research, I thought other people would be interested too, and that it would be more interesting if I could put the information into a novel, and that would help people see women in the gospel that had maybe not been seen or noticed. A lot of people don't really notice the women in the Bible.
Yes, I love that.
So that's the first book. It's called Forgotten Followers from Broken to Bold. But in doing it, I have my main character is overcoming trauma. Her parents were, her dad was very aggressive or assertive or dominant, and her mom was very silent and really abused. And she was abused a little bit as a child. And so I was researching a lot online with people that share their stories. And that's when I discovered that Christianity was behind a lot of the inequality between women and men. And a lot of the problems leading to potential abuse.
Yeah.
That's when I found your book, your novel, your podcast and your books.
Oh, really?
Oh. So
how did you find the podcast? Were you just looking around, or did you dial us in, or did you hear us on some other one? Or
yeah, it was probably in, I joined a number of Facebook groups where I follow trauma survivors and Christians who are deconstructing. I am part of the CBE, Christians for Biblical Equality Facebook group, and I imagine that you posted on there. Yeah. People quite often discuss your concept.
Yeah. Hmm. That's great. And then tell us more about this, the second book, the nonfiction one.
Yeah. So, I was thinking I would do a study guide for the novel to explain to people the ideas and the thinking and the ideology behind that. And, I got stuck because there was just too much on the theme of equality, to put into a study guide. And for me, because I was raised in a more or less egalitarian church, I did not know where these ideas were coming from. And that's why I had to discover, Genesis 3:16 is kind of the root of a lot of it, because Paul refers back to Genesis. So Paul's letters and Genesis. And so for me, it was in finding out the sources of how people twisted these scriptures, as well as finding out the new biblical scholarship that explains other ways of interpreting these scriptures. So this book, The Sword, shows both views side by side. I wanted to present each of them side by side.
Did you say the word butchered? Butchered the scriptures?
I said twisted.
Twisted. I'm not hearing so well, but that's a little more polite. Okay, so twisted the scriptures. So why don't you show us one of your cards, or what your page, how you make that work?
So this is the book. And so it is a book of flashcards. So I picked card number 2, which is one of the first arguments that a complementarian or a person who supports patriarchy would pull out. This card number 2, the complementarian person would read it and say, God created man first in the image of God. Woman is a derivative of man and a suitable helper. Men have dominion over the earth. Women serve men, and gender distinctions are God's design from creation. That's their point of view. And then side by side, the egalitarian would deflect that argument by saying, creation order is irrelevant. Both genders are the full image of God. Woman is a protector and ally of man, a suitable counterpart. And together, humans have dominion over the earth. Women and men serve God. Distinct gender roles are the result of sin. So both cards are based on Genesis 1 and 2.
So then when people play this game, what do they do with the cards?
Well, I mean, if it were young people, and you could just match the two numbers for a simple matching game of, you know, if you're collecting cards like you would in Rummy. But if you're with adults, you would maybe read out one half of the argument and try to see who has a matching one. I don't know if you're familiar with a game called Apples to Apples, where the person reading the card can decide what match is good as well.
Christy,
I love Apples. Yeah, it's one of my favorite games. I've had it for years. I love Apples to Apples.
The trouble with Apples to Apples is the person reading the card gets to be a ridiculous judge of which one is the best match, and there's no absolute right or wrong. But that's kind of like
this is different. Right. I love that because you get to see someone's personality of, are they the one that always picks the goofiest option, or do they go for the literal option? And so you kind of learn personalities, and I always liked it because you get to know people. But that would be an interesting way to get some discussion going on these topics.
So I was listening to a podcast myself. I was in the car the other day. I was coming back on a long road trip, and I was listening to a fellow interview a lawyer, a barrister from England. And the interviewer said, so give us the strongest point for the complementarian view, and give us the strongest point for the egalitarian view, and then give us the weakest for each one. And this barrister is his job is to be a negotiator between two parties and come up with the right thing. And so he's got a very sharpened skill on that. And he paused. He gave a long pause before he started answering that question. Finally, he said, "I find it difficult to answer that question because the more I looked into the complementarian views, the more and the justification for them, the more their argument kind of just disappeared into the mist." So the interviewer said, "So you don't really have any well-supported strong points for them." And the barrister did not.
What I was really surprised at is putting together this book, The Sword, there's like woman after woman after woman, there's dozens of women named, and each time the deflect or the defensive argument from the complementarian side is, well, what about? And then there's like three verses that keep coming out. So the complementarian side is based on a very few number of verses compared to the egalitarian, which is based on quite a few different women of the Bible.
So there have been times in the history of the church, there's actually a whole academic discipline called the development of doctrine. There was a point, who is Christ? He's fully God, fully man. Who is the Trinity? What's the doctrine of salvation? What's the doctrine of the church? Then we got into missions. What are missions? The Holy Spirit. And I think we're in a generation now where we're talking about men and women, and we're getting it clearly defined. So Joy's research was that if you get Genesis 3:16 wrong, then it influences everything downstream. And likely, I mean, in contrast, when you true it up, when you get it right, when you clear the pollution out of the spring, then the clear water flows down and all the rest gets cleared up. So let me try a little quiz. You've inspired me now. Look out. You've inspired me to play a little game. So I'm going to Christy and I'm going to ask both of you. Okay, Elaine. So would you tell me whether this is fact or fiction? Cause you wrote a fiction and then you did a nonfiction. So I'm going to say something and you tell me if this is fact or fiction. So the serpent tempter tempted three people at the tree. Fact or fiction?
Fiction.
Three people. Fiction. Right. Christ. Fiction. Didn't do it. Okay. So the serpent tempter was tempting them from an apple tree.
Fiction.
Fiction. Okay. So now the woman was alone at the tree when the serpent tempted her.
Fiction.
Fiction.
So remember your whole story about the artist or the sculpture you went to see in Italy where it showed Eve aligned with the serpent. It was very visual.
Yeah. Also, you know, with my girls being in kindergarten, I've been reading, you know, for the last 6 years now, all these children's Bibles to them. And it's amazing how many of them illustrate just Eve at the tree with the serpent. And Adam is missing until the next page when she's handing the fruit to him. And it's usually an apple.
I was going to reach for my copy of the Book of Eden. I can't find it here. But in it, I actually have a picture of that statue. And it was in Strasbourg, France, where around the back of her are these stone serpents embedded in Eve's back as if she's in league with the serpent tempter. And she was the temptress, which is... I was shocked. I did not know that during the Dark Ages, maybe that's why they were the Dark Ages. That's what they taught. Okay. I got another question for you.
Okay. And then I have another question for Elaine, but that'll be when your game is done.
Thank you, Christy. All right. So another question then, God spoke in the same way to the serpent tempter, the woman and the man.
Yeah. The sorrowful toil on the crawling on his belly and the sorrowful toil of the woman and the man working on the soil.
Okay, but I would say, I would answer opposite and say he uses the same structure speaking to the man and the serpent, but different structure to the woman. So the tone is totally different to the woman than it is to the serpent and the man.
And you each picked up something good. So, okay, that's a tie. I'll give you a tie on that one. All right. Yeah, the big discovery for me. Yeah, the big discovery for me is that to the serpent, God said, because you cursed is all the days of your life. And he said the same thing to the man, because you cursed is, and there were more, there's 6 points. And none of those 6 things are in God's speech to the woman. So then you're supposed to think, why are those two alike? Well, this, the angel was a rebel against God, and the male, the man, turned against God in rebellion and says, I'm gonna not going to have you rule over me. I'm going to rule over myself. So you've got the two rebels that, who each received a curse. The problem is people think that 1, 2, 3, they're all the same, and they each received a curse. And so they think that the woman received a curse, and then they try to find one. And the way our translations are now, they make it kind of look like that. You know, oh, I'm going to slap you with pain in childbirth. And Joy says, that doesn't, the Hebrew doesn't say that. It does not talk about the moment of delivery at all.
So I've commented online. I have commented, oh, Jesus, I mean, God didn't curse the woman. But people reply back to me and say, well, when he says, you're going to have pain in childbirth, or I will cause you to have pain in childbirth, it looks like it, even though he doesn't say, because you have done this, I curse. It's still, there's a consequence of pain or trouble for the woman.
So tell it not in Gath, as they say. I'll tell you a secret, okay? There is a new Bible translation in the process. And I didn't know who the members of the translation committee were. And I was talking to a wonderful scholar the other day who said, I'm on that committee. We're doing that translation. And I said, oh, we need to prolong our conversation here a little bit. and in their translation, they make it look like everybody else does. Since 1952, when the Revised Standard Version came out, they all say the same thing. I'm going to slap you with pain and childbirth in one way or another. But if you go back to the King James 1611, it didn't say that. They were true to the Hebrew. God says, I'm going to multiply your sorrowful toil, which the man's going to have too. And I'm going to multiply your conception. Two things. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. I got bad news and I got good news for you. But in this wonderful new translation coming out, they did the same thing. They made it look like I'm going to slap you with this other big bad thing, pain and childbirth. So one of the things we're trying to do, if you're riding a bicycle and you bang into a wall and it kind of gets crumpled up, the front wheel, and you try to get yourself home, but it's difficult. When you get home, then you adjust all the spokes and you true up the wheel. And what Joy and I want to do is we want to true up the verse. So we adjust this so we don't say things that make it look like God cursed her, but we show what's going on, that he had bad news and good news for her. Just like the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, we had mixed fruit. But yeah. He didn't limit woman in any way. He didn't curse her. He didn't treat her as if she was a rebel. She's the hero.
Yeah, it was really telling for me one time when I noticed when you said this thing about how multiplied conception was a real blessing to Eve, because back in the day, getting pregnant was a blessing. And I think too many in our world today, you getting blessing as a punishment. Oh, man, this is going to be a drag. So that is a blessing in 3:16, which I don't think very many people pick up on. But I have seen a lot of people now, I mean, I've looked through a number of translations that do use conception instead of childbirth in Genesis 3:16. And even Tim Mackey at the Bible Project has been saying, no, this is about conception and fertility. It's not about giving birth 9 months later. So I think at least that part is coming along.
Let's true it up. Okay, Christy, you've got this special juicy question here.
Well, I want to be aware of the time, and I feel like we are getting we are kind of hitting the end of the length of time we want for one episode. So I don't know. Maybe we need a part two, episode two. But Elaine, I have been appalled to see multiple peers of mine that I've known since high school years. Several end up in divorced marriages because of abuse. And the church, the spiritual community they had, which should be the first place to support, to protect, to equip women to step away from abuse, have been the very systems that have kept them in those unhealthy environments for too long. And I've been shocked that God could be so brutally misrepresented by those who should be the ones representing him. That, you know, I've seen some of these friends, girlfriends walk away from their faith because they don't know how to separate out the Christian community that didn't support them and didn't understand them, and the God that this community represents, who I would argue is not at all the God that this community has represented him to be. And so I'm intrigued by the angle that you also address, you know, that you wanted to write a book that addresses trauma, that addresses abuse, that addresses bringing women to a place of healing and back to their rightful place in relationships that are healthy. And I kind of wanted to get to find out more how you addressed that in your book and how you got interested in that side of things. For me, I'm interested because I have friends who I care about, who I want to see them walking with God again. And I'm so grieved that they've left the church and the faith because of the church.
That's it. There's just so much more at risk than just what, it's not a minor thing what the position of women and men is. It's enough to threaten their whole faith. And you had Natalie Hoffman on your site just recently explaining how this view makes us believe that God is abusive. So no wonder they're walking away from their faith. So in my novel, I have a woman who, I mean, the trauma happened prior to the novel. You're not going to be exposed to trauma in the novel. But each chapter, like, she meets people who give her suggestions, specific techniques to reframe ideas or to hold on to compliments or to accept compliments or to focus on what's true and good. Like, if we follow the things that Mara learns through the chapters, I believe it will help people who are recovering and are healing from trauma.
That's beautiful. That's awesome. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Well, how do we beautifully wrap this up, Dad?
Well, I think we need to tell people that we have a present that's being offered here. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, I just thought because we're having fun today with Fun Friday, Friends Friday, that I would give out one copy of this. It's a thin book, so I can mail it to anywhere in Canada or the US. And you just can email Bruce at True316.
Right. So
with your address.
Right. So if you email me at Bruce@True316.com and we'll have to sort out the who got here first or and then we'll forward that on to you, Elaine, and we'll make sure that they get a copy of that. Thanks. That's a great extra present for us. That's good.
Yeah. So one of our listeners.
We'll have links in the show notes if people want to get a hold of it there on their own too as well. So that'll be a good thing. Well, that's True Friends Friday.
I just want to thank you so much for being here, for letting me meet you today and see you in person, because I have just enjoyed listening to your podcast a lot, as well as looking up your articles and books. But the podcast is what I listen to most. And I just really appreciate what you're doing to free people up and also with your foundation. Thanks.
Thank you so much. All right. We'll see you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Lane.
Bye.
True 316 Foundation is the home of the Eden Podcast. Join us for $3.16 a month or more. Let's chew the verses on the key passages on women and men. Go to true316.com/partner.